Ahoy.
Hello.
And welcome to Policy Voices by Friends of Europe, an independent think tank with a difference. Each week from Brussels, we bring you powerful conversations with policy voices from around the world. Policy Voices talking policy choices.
Since the full-scale invasion, we saw an increased number of women joining the armed force voluntarily. They do this on a voluntary basis because in the same way as men do, they want to defend their country. And what are the needs in this specific case? In this case, for example, it might appear very strange, but there were no uniform tailor-made around female bodies, no body armor. So women had to use men uniforms. So women are thinner in the majority of the cases. Our body, it is shaped differently. Women get pregnant. So when we get pregnant, our body changes and we need to have this adapted. We have breasts, and so we cannot have a body armor, bulletproof vest that are not shaped around our body. This has a consequence, which is not being able to be protected and safe while we are fighting.
Hello and welcome to Policy Voices, Friends of Europe's weekly podcast on European and global affairs. I'm your host, Caterina Villanova. Just now you were listening to Irene Feli, NATO Special Representative for Women, Peace and Security. I sat down with Irene in NATO's headquarters in Brussels shortly after her return from her second trip to Ukraine. What Irene was describing, the lack of body armor tailored for women, is just one very practical example of why NATO still needs a special representative for women, peace and security. The start of Irene's tenure as NATO special representative for women, peace and security came mere weeks before Russia's full invasion of Ukraine. What had until then been a decade of crisis management quickly turned into NATO's core tasks of deterrence and defense. But how does one get to become NATO special representative for women, peace and security? For Irene Feline, it was not an obvious path. She told me how, being a wife of a diplomat, she found herself trapped in gender stereotypes and expectations, and how she had to fight for a career. The rest is history. I also asked her if she would be disappointed if her next boss would be another man, and what legacy she hopes to leave for her twins. So stay on that side to hear what Irene Feline, NATO Special Representative for Women, Peace and Security, had to say. Irene Feline, welcome to Policy Voices, and thank you so much. This is actually a first. It's the first time that Policy Voices comes to the NATO headquarters. So thank you so much for welcoming us here. How are you this afternoon?
I'm very well, thank you. And thank you for accepting, so for having me as part of your podcast and for accepting my invitation to record this episode here at the NATO HQ in Brussels.
Yes, it's our pleasure to be here. So Irene, you are the NATO Special Representative for Women, Peace and Security, and your tenure started pretty much at the same time as the war in Ukraine. How much of your work, how much of what you were thinking about, what your role would be, was shaped by this conflict? How much did you have to adapt?
Indeed, I started my mandate on January 17th. 2022, so almost 4 weeks before the full-scale invasion from Russia into Ukraine. I think there was no time to think. You know, I came at the beginning of your mandate, especially in a multilateral environment. What you do at the beginning is a lot of diplomacy, courtesy calls. You get acquainted with the environment and the colleagues. But I didn't have this privilege. I had to start immediately the work because in the weeks prior to the invasion, I mean, we knew that this was coming. And so we immediately had to go directly to business. It was difficult. It was difficult for all of us. It was very intense in terms of workload, but it was also challenging in terms of expectation, try to understand where we were going. So I remember the tensions of those weeks and the difficulty in seeing how my office could have, you know, been better integrated with the overall work that the alliance was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And what does it mean exactly, being NATO Special Representative for Women, Peace and Security? There is an acronym that I will not try to say.
It's SGSR for WPS. This is how we call it. But use the, what is easy for you?
I think I got in a role of saying NATO Special Representative for Women, Peace and Security.
You can call me Irene. That's easier. For
Irene, what does your day-to-day look like? What does it mean to be having this role at NATO?
So it's a very demanding role. It requires a lot of energy, and it would require days of 48 hours at least. You can see my mandate as maybe two-folded. So I represent the Secretary General. So I really represent the highest, the boss, how we want to call him here, within the alliance. When it comes to this specific topic, so I would like also to add that in addition to women, peace and security, I cover also the human security agenda and the work in this area that the alliance does. So I represent him, I represent the alliance, but, you know, allies and the decision in two ways, meaning that I carry on the work in these areas and I will come back within the work we do internally. I will come back on this, but I represent him and the alliance externally. So in my external engagement, so explaining what we do. So first we have to do. So we have to deliver policies and translate policies into action plans, implement them, monitor and evaluate. And on the other side is to explain externally why it's important integrating gender perspective, working on women, peace and security, how do we do, and to engage directly in project and in initiative externally.
And in that sense, you are currently working on a new policy for the women, peace and security agenda that you hope to have approved next month in order to be endorsed at July summit, a NATO summit in Washington. What can you tell me so far about this policy? How will it change compared to the policy that has been guiding your work in the past 2 years?
That's correct. We are in these days negotiating a new policy. That's what you describe is the normal process. So a document is discussed internally among alliance. Consensus has to be found in terms to have to a policy approved by the council first. And then normally it goes to endorsement to a ministerial meeting. Consequently, for some documents, they go to endorsement by head of state and government. The fact that the Women, Peace and Security policy is endorsed at the highest level showcases the real importance that the Alliance puts into the Women, Peace and Security agenda. It's the highest commitment that we could have. How has this changed? And this brings me back to the first question, how my work has been influenced by Ukraine. When I came, it was January, we said, and I remember that when I had my interview for the position, it was September. So only 3 or 4 weeks after the evacuation from Afghanistan. A lot also of my conversation these days and about the process was about this. This is what the Secretary General was talking about. This is what Alliance was dealing with. So also my hiring process and the conversation I had with my colleagues was what could be the role and with the women there. And we were in a decade of crisis management that had driven our policy. So how were we operating on the field? What it meant for the Alliance and our operations, having gender advisors deployed on the field, understanding what does this mean, integrating the women, peace and security agenda? You know, we know it means that women are important in crisis prevention and management and resolution, and women are victims and survivors of conflict-related sexual violence. So we need to address all this dimension. The time of 3 months, you know, that when I was selected and I started my work, everything has shifted from the crisis management, from NATO being on the field, to major threats on our eastern flank, which has led us to go back to one of the core of the mandate of NATO, deterrence and defense. So how do we translate this in a policy? What is working on gender perspective? It means bringing a gender analysis on what everything NATO does. So it's really integrated this in all action. So the policy now is focusing on bringing the core of the agenda where the core of NATO is. So across the core task, deterrence and defense, but also crisis prevention and management and cooperative security.
I think a very concrete example that we can talk about in mentioning that you actually just came back from Ukraine. How many times have you been in Ukraine since the start of the war?
Since the war, two times in the last year, yes.
So you just came back from your
last
second...
Last Thursday, yes.
Exactly. You just came back from Ukraine. And you, what can you tell us about your trip there? I know that you're also personally involved in developing new equipment for women. So perhaps this could be an example that you could explore a bit more when we're talking about what does this mean to have the women's agenda applied in practice. So can you tell us a bit more about
Absolutely. And that's a very good point. You know, as I said, what do I do in my job? I engage, I maintain the attention of the messages of the resolutions of the WPS agenda, why this is important. I listen to women and I bring this message to the leadership. So I try always to connect with the highest political level, but also with civil society. And in this very specific case, it's a lot is about women in defenders, women in the armed forces. I do this here, of course, at the HQ. But the case of Ukraine is very particular. Since the full-scale invasion, we saw an increased number of women joining the armed forces voluntarily. They are enrolled officially, but they were not called. They do this on a voluntary basis because in the same way as men do, they want to defend their country and they are fighting for a just peace. What does this mean, the women, peace and security? It means that we need to listen to the needs of women. And what are the needs in this specific case? In this case, for example, it might appear very strange, but there were no uniform tailor-made around female bodies. No body armor. So women were, now still are to some extent, so had to use men uniforms. So women are thinner in the majority of the cases. Our body, it is shaped differently. Women get pregnant. So when we get pregnant, our body changes and we need to have this adapted. We have breasts, and so we cannot have a body armor, bulletproof vest that are not shaped around our body. This has a consequence, which is not being able to be protected and safe while we are the fighting. So now, in the past months, some project led by a Ukrainian organization have led as a result to the production of female uniform, especially combat uniform and body armor. Starting from, say, the body armor, but also to go to the underwear, the pregnancy. So I was there, I tested them, and I think it's a unique project, not only because of the uniform, but also because they are working on the stories and the narrative of what it means being women on the front line. The organization is called Armed Women Now, and we are exploring how NATO, within the framework of the Comprehensive Assistance Package, that it's the multi-year package that the alliance has to support non-lethal aid in Ukraine, can fund the production of those uniforms.
In that sense, is your job also being responsible for deconstructing all these narratives that we have when thinking about women in conflict? We immediately associate women as victims, as being the civilians, as being the victims of sexual violence. And when we think of men, we immediately think of men as the fighters, as the perpetrators. Are you also working to deconstruct these narratives, these ideas that we have?
This is exactly the main message of the agenda Women, Peace and Security, is recognizing that women are agent of change in conflict resolution. I like to say that conflict prevention is a key part, you know, preventing diplomacy, mediation, negotiation is extremely important. We need more women to contribute to this dimension, and also recognizing the distinct impact that war and conflicts have on women, and especially when it comes to conflict-related sexual violence. So for me, this is the key message I always carry with me in my conversation, and I try to guide my actions.
I would like to quote you now. No matter what the crisis, we have seen that women take crucial roles in fighting for peace and security. And indeed, you mentioned that at the outset of the war in Ukraine, we saw this the great numbers of women joining the war. But in the context of this renewed emphasis on European defense, of course, because of the war in Ukraine, do you see that your agenda, the role of women, is being given the importance that you need, that you think it should have?
I think that there has been an increased interest on the women, peace and security agenda because there has been a wide recognition of the fact that you cannot have peace and stability if women are not fully involved in everything we do here at NATO, but at the European Union and in at the UN at national level. So I think that all our efforts are coming together at the different levels. Certainly, we are not where we would like to be or where we should be. And there is a global pushback also against democracy and the role of women. But from my perspective and from this inside perspective, I see how much progress we have done to this regard. You might be aware or not from my bio that I already work at NATO in 2013 and 14 as the advisor of the very first special representative for women, peace and security. I can tell you in the same way I always tell allies as well that when I came here 2 years ago, I was impressed by the progress, the understanding and the willingness to work more on this agenda and the recognition that this agenda is a fundamental path to peace and security.
Mm-hmm. What would you like to achieve? What would you do you set for yourself as the greatest goal that you would like to achieve during your mandate?
Oh, the best and biggest achievement would be to dismiss this position, you know, this position of being so special, you know. It is important, but it still underlies the fact and stress the fact that you need something special to do, to carry on a work that should be the routine and part of our everyday business.
Indeed. Do you take issue with the fact that it's special representative for women, peace and security, that NATO still needs to have a special role in order to make sure that this agenda is prevalent in all the work that it does?
They still need to do that. And it's not only NATO, it's a bit everywhere. We have special envoys for geographical regions here at NATO, but at the EU as well. We have this at the UN equally. We are still, I think, in a phase where we need to give a dedicated role and importance to certain topics and educate and work towards a mainstreaming and a change of the institutional culture that will lead to the normalization of this work.
And as NATO's special representative for women, peace and security, would you be disappointed if your next boss would be another man?
No, I would not. What I expect is a gender-responsive leadership from all leaders, both men and women. I support female leadership. I think we need more women and leadership position. That could be NATO, the EU, governmental levels, ministerial levels. But what is more important is that all leaders act in a gender-responsive ways and they are accountable for our political commitments.
As of this week, there is a new flag outside the NATO's headquarters. How do you expect that Sweden will become an ally in your agenda?
Sweden has always been an ally on the agenda, even when it was a partner, in its role as a partner. They are champion in moving the women, peace and security agenda forward. They were the champion in developing the first feminist foreign policy ever. And when it comes to NATO, we have a very strong partnership on the implementation of gender in military operation because they host our department head, the NCGM, so the NATO Center for Gender in Military Operation, where our gender advisors are trained, but also where all the commanders and generals go for a gender awareness training, bringing it back to my previous point, which is that everybody needs to understand what we are talking about. If we want gender advisors to be able to perform their job, each from the commanders to all the soldiers have to be prepared and aware of the and understand what the agenda, this agenda means.
You have an interesting and perhaps unusual background in this building where we find ourselves. You studied conservation and cultural heritage and museology mm-hmm. at the Louvre. How did you find yourself in the in security and defense?
I had a dream when I was a child, which was to be the director of a small museum, a small collection. So I studied, I'm Italian, so I come from a country with this amazing cultural heritage. So I thought my path was clear. I had this this passion. Then I went to Paris, another place with a amazing cultural heritage. I studied museology, and that was really my dream. And then I fell in love with my husband, who was going abroad for his job, and I followed him.
Where was abroad at the time?
Abroad was Turkey. And when I found myself there, I was quite young, under 30. I had not questioned what I was going to do. I was flexible, and I thought I was going to find another job there. But then life was different. And I started, my husband is a diplomat, so to find my question and challenge myself in my new role and what the expectations were around the role of a spouse, because I was not considering myself in this role. And that is where I started seeing this tension between my dream, my willingness to be have an active life, and what the real gender stereotypes are. You know, you enter into this role, and then suddenly, without having a choice, you find yourself to serve teas or have cookies or other expectation where to have children. And it took me a moment of reflection to understand that this was not only what I didn't want, but I needed to fight back. And this is why I enrolled for a master on women's and gender studies. And I started looking at the conditions of women in the world, in the society, but also throughout this very personal lens. And this led me to start working on different topics connected with gender equality, starting from gender-based violence and then within the conflict. And then 15 years ago, I started, you know, I encountered the agenda and NATO, and the other is story.
And here you are now.
And here I am.
Do you see your career, your future career, always within NATO? Or would you like to, do you see yourself exploring other avenues?
No, this is a temporary position. All the high-level position of senior leaders at NATO are temporary, and it's rightly so. We bring different perspectives, our national perspective, I mean cultural perspective, but also our personal perspective. And what I just shared with you, which is very personal, really shaped my mindset and the reason why I'm doing what I'm doing. So this is a parenthesis in my life, but it's a very and it's very enriching. And certainly I will continue to work in security and defense with this perspective. But there are many ways to include gender perspective in the Women, Peace and Security agenda across all the spectrum of security and defense issues.
Would you see yourself going back into a more of an activist role, or do you see yourself as an activist? Can you consider yourself an activist in your current role?
I do, but in a different way. It's different to be an activist when you are part of civil society and when you have a high-level position in an institution.
Final question before I let you go. You are a proud mother of two twins. Well, two, of course, twins. What is the legacy that you would like to leave for them?
I would like them not to find trapped in a gender stereotype in the same way I was. I would like them to be able to find themselves in different paths of life and not have the shock I had to see the entire society with so many strict expectations about me as a woman in a specific time and place. to be free to play soccer as one of the my twins does, who is completely different from the other one. Now she is coping with that. But even as a child, she felt that she was wrong because of her passions. So that's what I would like to see, a world where my girls, but for all children, would never feel wrong because they don't fit into what the gender expectations and the stereotypes are.
I think they could not possibly have a better example of that than their own mother. Irene Fellin, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for staying on that side to listen to my conversation with Irene Fellin, NATO Special Representative for Women, Peace and Security, straight from NATO's headquarters in Brussels. If you want to see some clips from this interview recorded at NATO Studio, head to Friends of Europe social media pages. As always, we would love to hear what you thought of today's episode. You can search for Friends of Europe on LinkedIn or X, or send us an email. Our address is press@friendsofeurope.org. And don't forget to subscribe to Friends of Europe's podcast wherever you get your podcasts to never miss an episode of Policy Voices. I'm Caterina Villanova, and I will be with you again next week. Until then, goodbye.